engaging your provider, engaging your community up front, and deciding what your model should be, and then just creating a plan and executing that plan is very important.
This is episode 228 of the Community Broadband Bits podcast from the Institute for Local Self-Reliance. I'm Lisa Gonzalez. A number of states have laws on the books that obstruct local governments from directly providing high-quality internet access to businesses and residents, or even partnering with local providers. Nebraska happens to be one of them. In Lincoln, the community found a way to work within the confines of the law by using publicly owned conduit and creating a welcoming environment for private internet service providers. As a result, Lincoln has entered into an agreement with the local provider Allo Communications, who will use the conduit to build its fiber-to-the-home network. David Young, Lincoln's fiber infrastructure and right-of-way manager, talks with Chris this week. David discusses the early days of the project and how it has evolved. He also shares more information about the franchise agreement and more about the partner Lincoln chose. Be sure to take a few moments and listen to Chris's interview with David and several of his colleagues in episode 182 from last December. Now here are Chris and David Lang, Lincoln, Nebraska's fiber infrastructure and right-of-way manager, talking about the community's conduit network and how they are capitalizing on it to bring better connectivity and technology to Lincoln.
Welcome to another edition of the Community Broadband Bits podcast. I'm Chris Mitchell. And today I'm speaking with David Young, Fiber Infrastructure and Right-of-Way Manager for the City of Lincoln and the Public Works Department. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm excited to speak with you again. Last time we had you on the show was the day after my son was born, because he came a little bit early, and I really wanted to get that interview in, so I'm a little less frazzled today, although, once again, some dramatic events this week as we're recording the week of the election.
Yes, I did enjoy seeing your son at the Broadband Communities Conference, a good-looking kid, so it looks like he's very healthy.
Yes, he's doing well. Now, I wanted to note that since we spoke, you've become a bit of a trade show hopper. You were at the NTIA in Big Sky in Missoula, where we served on a panel together. And then you, I think, knocked him dead here in Minneapolis for the Broadband Communities Conference. So, I hope that people will feel that you're a more seasoned, more big get for us now.
Oh, I think you're being overly kind. How much can you talk about broadband in front of a group of people who know a lot about broadband? So,
well, I just want to see if I can start off by making you blush and be modest. We're going to talk about some more details that I've learned about the franchise you have with a fiber to the home provider in your community that results from your system of conduit. And I think people should start by listening to that podcast that we had done previously. It was in December of 2015. But for a quick refresher, for people who aren't familiar with Lincoln, what have you all done to supercharge internet access in the community?
Starting in 2012, the mayor and public works department came up with a broadband technology plan. The goal was to attract new carriers to the market and have those be very specific carriers. We wanted Tier 1, Tier 2, and Tier 3 carriers to provide competitive access to broadband for businesses. And under state law, Lincoln or any city in Nebraska is not allowed to provide municipal broadband. So Lincoln kind of took stock and figured out that what we could do is put in conduit systems and lease out those conduit to other providers. So we initially put in 5 miles of conduit in our downtown area as part of a revitalization project and started looking around and found 80 miles of abandoned water line, probably 40 miles of abandoned wastewater line. We repurposed those lines into conduit systems and traffic conduit, old electric conduit, old natural gas lines, basically any pipe we could get our hands on and tied it into a conduit system that now is over 350 miles. We've leased that out to 7 carriers total. When we got down to the last space, we started talking about, gee, this is pretty successful. Maybe we ought to look at fiber to the home. And so we started working with different carriers and financing professionals to build a fiber to the home program with that last space in the conduit system. And in December of last year, we signed that agreement and can you believe it's already been a year? So it's been very exciting on our side, very busy.
Well, yes, I can imagine. Now, how much did the city spend in creating this asset?
In total, about $1.2 million over 4 years. So there was about $600,000 upfront in conduit expense, and then staff time and maintenance, and a $600,000 CIP. So a little bit more than about $1.2 million.
In CIP, that's Capital Improvement Program?
Yes. For all those in the government, CIP is the Capital Improvement Plan, which is a six-year plan that is how you allocate your capital dollars across programs like streets, water, sewer, those kind of things.
So if we ignore the new businesses that have come to town using some of this fiber that these carriers are leasing from you, and if we ignore the better competitiveness of some of the businesses that were already in town, what are some of the direct benefits the city has had just in terms of raising revenue from that $1.2 million that they spent?
If you're only talking pure money from the system, we make $475,000 a year in lease revenue.
That's like a three-year payback then, just from that alone from today?
Right, and we've been making money since 2013. So 2013 is like $65,000, and then we had two more leases in 2014, and really 2015 was our banner year. Right now we're at $475,000. With the Allo project, we're expected to be in the neighborhood of $2 to $2.7 million a year by 2018.
And Allo is a local company. It's in Nebraska. I know people in Colorado are familiar with it. It's incredibly well regarded by its customers, from what I can tell. But tell us a little bit more about Allo. And I think, it's in kind of a unique position there in Lincoln.
Allo is a Western Nebraska company. It was started by, they like to say, Nebraskans for Nebraskans. And the city was meeting and doing presentations on fiber to the home and the value of the community to various local organizations, building that community support for the program. And we were meeting with financiers and talking to them, and Allo was brought in and offered to competitively bid on the Fiber to the Home project in Lincoln. We had another company, Bluestem, also bidding on the franchise, and Bluestem is still in operation. They are building one portion of the city, and so we actually have three Fiber to the Home projects going right now. Allo won the citywide franchise. Bluestem is doing a small neighborhood in northeast Lincoln, and then our incumbent provider, Windstream, has announced that they will upgrade 5,000 homes over the next 2 years in southeast Lincoln to fiber to the home. So it's been very successful just from a community planning aspect of partnering with the private sector to build this infrastructure. But it took a lot of work. It's hard to believe that we're going on our fifth year of operation.
I want to clarify something with the franchise, which is, I think sometimes people think of franchises as being exclusive. Now, when you talk about offering a franchise, because of the limited conduit space, that's a franchise to use that conduit. A company like Bluestem, there's nothing stopping them from building to the rest of the city. They just wouldn't be able to use the same asset that Allo is using. Am I getting that correct?
You are. We had one space left in the conduit system, and I will tell you, sometimes that space isn't even there. the conduit system is getting very full. It's been very successful. The last guaranteed spot in the conduit system, what we said was we wanted somebody to provide fiber to the home services, and in order to do that, we wanted a franchise for that last position. And Allo and Bluestem both worked with the city very closely it took us about 90 days to come to an agreement. Allo was ultimately chosen to do the project.
And now when you say there's no more room in the conduit, I'm assuming that over time you'll fix that. You'll be putting in extra conduit, or you might be doing something differently now, because it's not like this is the end of the conduit forever.
Correct. No. There's nothing to prohibit the city from putting in additional conduit, and we are. The new conduit system, as we're building it out, is designed for six carriers occupancy. And all extensions of the conduit system that are performed by private providers are deeded over to the city and owned by the city. So we get all of the additional expansion, and all expansion construction is now under the new standard of six-pack of conduit system.
And we did talk about that in the previous show. So if people want more detail, I invite them to go review that. The transcript's on the on our website, immunitynetworks.org. But before we get into the franchise, which is where I'm really excited about some of the things that you guys are doing with that, I wanted to make sure people understand Allo is a little bit of a unique company that has, I think, more of a local focus than other companies. And the reason that I think it's important is because other cities that might think, oh, well, we'll build our own conduit system, you know, you may not get the same results. I hope that they would. I hope that they'll find firms that are interested. But Allo has a direct relationship to another Lincoln company, Nelnet, which I'm hoping you can tell us a little bit more about in terms of how Allo is capitalized.
Nelnet is a Nebraska-based student loan provider, I believe, in a bank, and they have been very successful, very community-focused. They were one of the entities we were working with to build community support for the Fiber to the Home program, and Nelnet decided they would capitalize the entire project for Allo. So they really believe in the community in Lincoln, Nebraska, and broadband is an infrastructure that is designed for 21st century cities, and that they wanted Nelnet, their hometown, to have that infrastructure. But it's my understanding they have given Allo a $100 million loan to build the entire city.
Right. And I just want to, I think, you know, from my perspective as someone who works at the Institute for Local Self-Reliance, we love seeing that kind of local focus, local businesses investing in the community. And I think the city of Lincoln has really done a great job in terms of making it easier for that to happen and really facilitating that. You know, in particular, because you have this conduit system, you have a little bit more leverage in negotiating with Allo for this franchise. If you didn't have the conduit system, do you think you would have had a different discussion with Allo?
Yes, and I think that, you know, I have talked to several communities in Nebraska and a few surrounding states about this project, and I think your cautionary statement is very correct. You know, sometimes building a conduit system isn't the right model, but I do think that engaging your provider, engaging your community up front, and deciding what your model should be, and then just creating a plan and executing that plan is very important. We had the last space in the conduit system. We had a very successful model, and we had a ton of community support for our program. When you put those three things together, yes, we had a significant asset walking into the negotiations for the Allo project, and I think that was borne out in the agreement. So I wouldn't describe it as leverage. Any partnership, what you bring to the partnership, it creates value for you, and what the other party brings creates their value. And so we were just trying to maximize value for both parties, and with a very successful system already in place, we had a lot of value on our side of the table.
And because you brought that value, you could then make asks of Allo. And one of the things I would start with is this idea of the SSIDs, which is, I think we're using that as shorthand for virtual networks. An SSID is the name of a wireless network that you see when your device is trying to connect to a Wi-Fi network. Now tell us, in terms of Allo's network, how these virtual networks are involved.
Chris, you're going to cause me to geek out, and your listeners may want to fast forward to this next section.
Well, I think there's other people who might be fast forwarding to this section because we really don't geek out enough. You never know.
So one of the sections of the franchise, and this is a public document, anybody can have access to it, is called Service to Government Buildings and Facilities. Standard clauses in many franchises, but there's one section I'd like to read it to you. The franchisee shall provide 15 virtual local area networks, VLANs, across the entire system. The public VLANs shall be provided free of charge to the city for non-competitive use. These VLANs shall be available at every connection and termination point on the franchisee's network. To those network engineers out there listening, they will have a big smile on their face, because that means I have 15 virtual networks across the entire system that VLAN that Allo deploys. And at every termination and connection point, meaning wireless access points, I can have access to those VLANs. I can turn up my own SSID, Lincoln Public Schools access, health department access. Those are a few of the ones that we're working on right now. A public VLAN access for education is in our library system, combining those two together so they are available on the entire system. It is very exciting. VLANs, if you really want to go to sleep late at night, just look up and read about VLANs. And basically, it's just an addressing system for the network. And we have 15 of them.
And let's talk about one use case that I'm very excited about. I've been, in some ways, evangelizing for this type of approach. The intricate technology is not as important to me as the sense of what you can do with it. And so I like to imagine I have a child in the public school system. They have a device, likely, from the public school system. This is hypothetical, of course. Jackson is almost 1 year old. But what happens is wherever he goes with that device, as long as those VLANs are there, that device could just log in. And so if he's at a friend's house or even if, you know, maybe I'm a low income family, if then he goes out to a public access point or perhaps the neighbor's signal is there. And if the neighbor has consented to this, then his device will just connect and effectively he will be at school on his device.
With all of the schools' network security policies and access to all of the public schools' resources, the public library resources, it would be as if seamlessly he was inside school on the same network. So yes, that is the one of the most exciting use cases for us as well.
The nice thing is that if you're a parent who's really worried about your child being on the open internet where they might find material that they're not even seeking and would be inappropriate, the fact that even in your home, you wouldn't even have to worry about managing that connection. Because I think a lot of parents are worried that that their kids are going to be more tech savvy than they are, and or they're just worried that they won't have it set correctly. But now, even in your own home, your kid is using that device, you know, behind the filters and using all those resources. To me, that just seems like it's a very good solution.
We were very excited about it. It was one of those conversations. You know, it's like, what could we do with this? What would be the actual cost of providing this? And it's not a lot. Because, you know, there's some version of over 9,000 VLANs on a particular network. So what is providing 15 cost? Not a lot from the provider, other than willingness and creativity of thought. You know, by building this network as a public-private partnership, there was kind of a higher level discussion than just a dollar here or a dollar there. It's what could we do together? And the virtual network, virtual local area network VLAN project is actually my personal favorite part of the agreement. And as we go forward, we're connecting all of the traffic signals in the city as they're building it out. We have a new program called Greenlight Lincoln, which is upgrading our entire traffic system to the 21st century. We'll be putting in a new ATMS, Advanced Traffic Management System, next year to leverage all of these new connections. And over the next 3 years, every streetlight in the city will be connected to this new ATMS system.
So let me just suggest that perhaps your traffic engineers haven't seen Die Hard 4. That's a little bit concerning.
Technology should be treated cautiously. I agree. And Die Hard 4 was a wonderful movie. But
yeah, especially the part where the car flies up to take the helicopter out. But it's not something I've seen more than 10 times, I assure you.
but if you think about, you know, commute times and public dollars and impacting people's daily life, if we can make the system more efficient, that impacts everybody's life every day.
Right.
Whether you're riding a bus or whether you're driving your own car.
Right, you can do like prioritization for public transit. You can, you know, as you said, if everyone spends less time in congestion, you're not only saving them time, you have less pollution. There's tremendous benefits to this.
On that, and then the other piece is, what if we don't have to widen the road? You know, to widen the road costs us a road widening project for 1 mile is $10 million. what if we can just upgrade the infrastructure and allow more cars to travel through faster? We don't have to spend that public dollar there. We can spend it on maintaining that road instead of widening it and impacting those properties that are adjacent to it. So it is really exciting for us. It's an exciting time to be in Lincoln working with the Public Works Department. Fiber to the home, the fiber to the business project, the Greenlight Lincoln project. There's a lot of technology projects going on right now in Lincoln.
Well, we talked about a couple of different aspects with the franchise. Is there anything else that you see that you are doing in Lincoln, working with Allo, that others aren't doing, where you're getting ahead of the curve?
Defining the characteristics of service is something we do in our franchise. We basically, in most franchises, you provide service to the city. Great. But we go a little further and we say that all residents and subscribers shall be provided service under non-discriminatory rates, terms, and conditions, meaning everybody gets the same price. No more negotiating for price. We also say that there are no residential contracts for service allowed. So if you don't like the price you're receiving, you're not locked into a contract. We also do not allow installation fees except for in very unusual circumstances. You can't get charged to have it installed. There is no contract, and you're paying the same rate as your neighbor. We think these are actually very good things to put in a franchise because it creates a very competitive marketplace for the carrier. They have to compete on customer service and quality of service, not on contracts and the fact that you negotiate better than your neighbor about price. So I think that's important, and I think that other communities should consider doing that. I'm staff for the Telecom Advisory Board for the city, and a lot of the complaints we get are, my service isn't great from X carrier, and I pay too much, but there is no competition. That was the single most, the highest complaint that we received, the highest number of complaints that we received was, there's no competition. So when you're building out a new infrastructure and you're going to build to every home, ensuring that those competitive roadblocks are not institutionalized in your franchise agreement was very important to us. And I think other cities could look at that.
So I want to talk briefly about rights of way management, which is a part of your title. And I'll telegraph that you're going to be back for a show in later this year, or in certain, maybe another 10 episodes, in which we are going to be talking about some small cell deployment type stuff that your approach is enabling you to do. But one of the things I feel like you've done in Lincoln is that you have simplified permitting in ways that both Allo and Bluestem may find it easier to pull permits and to build than they would in my city, in St. Paul, Minnesota, perhaps. Do you have any advice for communities in terms of dealing with rights of way?
One of the major initiatives we had in 2013 was how to make our system more business friendly, and permitting was the number one area of conversation with every carrier we talked to. And so we did a little reorganization project and a study inside of Public Works and identified every staff position that was associated with managing the right-of-way, inspections, plan review, private development, public development, and we put them into one team called the Right-of-Way Construction Team. And that team is responsible for all public-facing right-of-way construction projects, meaning if it's a natural gas project, if it's a water line project, if it's a sewer line project, if it is not a CIP project, so not a capital project, then this group manages that and works with the public to ensure a fast, safe, and affordable project. As part of that program, we created an electronic permit system where carriers or franchisees can upload their plan set and a very simple permit, and our goal is to have that approved in 2 business days or less. Sometimes we get a little bit longer than that, but most of the time we get it approved in about 2 business days.
And one of the things you had told me before was that when it comes to dealing with these companies, many of which I think local governments are frustrated with because they don't feel like they can get enough out of those companies in return for use of the right of way, I think you've said those companies are much more willing to negotiate on terms that would be viewed as favorable to the community if the community can turn permits around quickly. That's the thing they really care about.
Well, the old adage, time is money, is very important. From the time a salesperson goes into a business and says, I would like to provide you with next generation broadband, to the time the company can actually deliver that broadband is a very sensitive topic. The faster they can do it, the better they look to their customers. And when they go slow, they point the finger at the city and say, you know, the city's, we can't get through permits, blah, blah, blah. If you can align your interest with the company, which is, you know, the city wants that customer turned up on broadband, we want them to be a happy customer. They're our customer, too. So streamlining the permit process, it takes a little insight, you know, into why you're a community, why you're a service provider in the community, and what your values are as an organization. For Public Works, it was providing good customer service. Well, that means providing good customer service to our corporate clients as well, and permits is how we do that. So establishing a goal, making that goal known, putting a goal in the contract, that gives the carrier comfort, allows them to kind of forecast a little bit better. And so it gives them a better level of customer service, a better sense of partnership in the agreement instead of a one-sided agreement. And it has paid off with us. All of our contracts have 15 minimum day turn times permits, and we try to do it in two.
Great. Well, I want to ask if there's any last words of wisdom you might have, you know, from your entire lifetime working on this conduit project.
You know, this is the second conduit project I've worked on. Getting out there and talking to the community is critical.
Let me ask you about that for a second, right? Because I just imagine me going out and trying to talk to people in the community about conduit, and I imagine people rolling their eyes and being like, I'm bored or I'm not interested. What does that mean?
Well, you know, I don't talk about conduit.
Okay.
I talk about the internet. We open up with a couple of jokes and, you know, everybody laughs and we have a good time. And then we talk about the internet and why it's important in their lives. You know, the access to a $1 trillion marketplace, the competitiveness with other cities to attract and retain young people, young workers. We talk about, you know, the highest paid IT jobs, network engineers, database administrators and architects, server engineers. You don't get those jobs unless you have a good, robust broadband infrastructure. People get excited about that. A lot of people still don't understand, you know, truly what the internet is. There's a feeling in some circles that it's a nebulous thing. Why is it important to me? And so my presentations generally are, you know, 10 slides and 15 jokes, and then we talk about, you know, what's really important to them is how their business can leverage the internet to make more money, be more customer focused. I'm done in about 30 minutes, and then we answer questions for 30 minutes. And it's a great time. People feel like you're actually talking to them about what's important to them. We don't really talk about conduit. Usually I bring a piece of conduit, a piece of fiber, and pass it around the room and let everybody touch it and feel it so they kind of get an idea. When I first started here in 2012, almost every group that I went to that I took this piece of conduit and fiber to loved it. I mean, people wanted to see it. They just had never seen, they'd heard about fiber their whole life. They've never seen it. They've never touched it. So giving them that tactile sensation of handing around and, you know, a piece of hard conduit in your hand, and somebody says, well, what happens if somebody digs into it and you bang the conduit on the table? It's pretty tough stuff. And they laugh, and, you know, it's just a good time. You know, you have these visions, and I've been to these meetings where it's long and painful and slow, and, you know, it doesn't have to be that way. I mean, but it takes a lot of work in building a presentation that's fun and exciting and really talks to what people care about, not what you care about. So I care about conduit, but most people really don't care about that. They just care about the internet and how it impacts their life. So talking about that is the best advice I can give people, because people get excited about that. And then you get to, you know, ask for, you know, support, asking for help in the community to prioritize budget money for that project. It's a finite pool. People want to support projects that they like. So you have to get out there and market your project to the community so that the mayor and city councilors hear from those groups to say, yes, we want this. Yes, we want to support this. This is a good thing.
I think that's a great note to end the show on. So thank you so much for coming on.
Chris, thank you very much.
That was Chris talking with David Lang, Lincoln, Nebraska's fiber infrastructure and right-of-way manager. As the network unfolds, we will bring you more news. Remember, we have transcripts for this and other Community Broadband Bits podcasts available at muninetworks.org/broadbandbits. Email us at podcast@muninetworks.org with your ideas for the show. Follow Chris on Twitter. His handle is @CommunityNets. Follow muninetworks.org stories on Twitter, where the handle is @muninetworks.org. Subscribe to this podcast and all of the podcasts in the ILSR podcast family on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever else you get your podcasts. Never miss out on our original research by also subscribing to our monthly newsletter at ilsr.org. We want to thank the group Mojo Monkeys for their song Bodacious, licensed through Creative Commons, and we want to thank you for listening to episode 228 of the Community Broadband Bits podcast.